Swami Kriyananda tells a story from the time when he was living with Yogananda, and there was another disciple there who was quite given to visions and extraordinary kinds of experiences. And this disciple had a vision of himself as being Yogananda's disciple back in the ancient land of Lemuria, I think it was, which was how many tens of thousands of years before. And here this disciple was still striving, and as it turned out, not all that successfully, in that incarnation to come to a state of God realization. And when he looked back, it had been going on for tens of thousands of years. Swami Kriyananda's question to Master then was, does it always take so long? And then Swami said, have I too been your disciple for thousands of years? And Master's answer was very diplomatic. He said, it's been a long time. That's all that I'll say. And Swamiji was just appalled, is the only word for it, having come with such, you know, eager enthusiasm, the thought that how many times have I been through this cycle? And then Swamiji said to Master, does it always take so long? And then Master said, yes. And then he sort of said, desire for this thing or that thing takes you away again and again and again. And in that same context, Swamiji himself has talked about his own past life experiences. He doesn't talk about it with a great deal of fanfare. Many years ago, there was a spiritual teacher who became very popular for a while. I would say a self-declared spiritual teacher. And he presented as part of his resume not only what he'd done in this lifetime, but all the great saints that he'd been in the past. And they would actually put advertisements in magazines and tell you, you know, that who you were getting, all these others. Well, Swami never put it forward like that, although he did talk about it. We have certain confirmed sightings of himself and Master in different incarnations. But what he also has talked about is his spiritual failings from the Book of Bhrigu, which is a book of prophecy, a very reliable book of prophecy that you can sometimes get readings from in India. He talked about having attained very high states of consciousness. At one point he attained, as it was described by Bhrigu, shanti in his vrittis, which means to say the whirlpools of karma were completely calmed. That's Patanjali's definition of self-realization, the neutralization of the vortices of feeling in the vrittis, in the chakras. Shanti in the vrittis means a state of complete equilibrium in terms of any karmic compulsion, and he fell from that state. You know, just desire for this thing or that thing takes you away again and again. And that's only one. Swami gives us several examples of having been Master's disciple in previous incarnations, having been, as Judas was, taken into the close circle. But that's no guarantee. Now, I find all of this exceedingly depressing, and it's quite possible that some of you find it depressing too. It's depressing on so many different levels. It's depressing on the endless, anguishing monotony of this project. It's also depressing on the sense of just sort of confidence that we have it right at all, that we're really like on the right track and have the ability to stay on the right track. So it's a constant challenge. Challenge to be both realistic about the effort that's required on the spiritual path and optimistic about our ability to be able to do it. And in many ways, it's strange to me how many different cycles, I would say point of reference, a person has if you stay on the path for a long time. I've been serious on the path since my early 20s now, which is quite a few decades. It's not tens of thousands of years, although one presumes that one has been at it at least for a little while in order to be here. But I'm so interested how the facets of the diamond, how different ones of them sort of show up at different times. And I was reflecting on the way Swamiji became in the very last years of his life. When you listen through, we have many recordings from very early on. And in the early years, the 70s and the 80s especially, when Swamiji was really introducing to the people who had come to be part of Ananda, introducing really to America, introducing to the spiritual movement in this country, the whole of Master's teachings in a way that Master himself did not really even articulate them, and the fact that so much of what Master did was neither recorded nor filmed nor written down, so only a tiny fragment of his starting in 1920 and all of his back and forth across the country. I mean, you read in this diary that we receive through email, if you want to receive it, of what Yogananda was doing every day in these particular years. And you see that he was all over the country talking about all kinds of subjects, health, healing, wealth, relationships, India, literature, politics, anything. He just had topics all over the map, and some of them, you know, quite cheerfully, the superconscious way to superconscious health and sort of very dynamic. But we don't have any of those recordings. And we have some notes, but we really don't know what he said. So it was Swamiji who had to really put this forth. And through the 70s and the 80s, Swami was, it's very interesting. He talked very fast. Sometimes it's also the recordings are a little speeded up, but he did talk very fast, I remember. And his words just poured out like this, and his concepts poured out. It was like he knew he had only a certain amount of time. And it wasn't really just the people in the room for 1 hour. It was the whole lifetime, the whole opportunity to put forward this entire new way of thinking about things. And he was running as fast as he could on a certain level to just get as much out into the ether as he possibly could. And very sophisticated and really quite fascinatingly complex articulations of all of the nuances of every aspect of the path. So it's a treasure trove that generations will be working with, because it was recorded, and then later it was filmed. I mean, imagine if we'd had recordings of Jesus speaking, or recordings of Sri Yukteswar, or recordings of Babaji, just how valuable that would be. This is Dwapara Yuga. These things are happening now. But gradually over the years, it was sort of like that was done. And Swami began to speak in different ways. And by the end of his life, his subject, no matter what it was announced, it would almost always turn into him telling us, as if for the first time, how he found Autobiography of a Yogi, how enamored he was, how completely taken immediately he was by Master's picture, how he clutched the book to his heart in the company of a worldly friend who was trying to persuade him to go into advertising, which is really where the money was these days, and how he fled from New York City to be Master's disciple. And then always with tears running down his face, Swami would talk about seeing Master, what that meant, and being accepted as a disciple. And it was always a wonderful personal moment when you realize that he was going to tell you the story again. To try to go there with him and think about how this entire lifetime, and who knows how many tens of thousands of years before this, of spiritual seeking, all kept coming down to that one story. All the philosophy, all the erudition, you know, the scripture, everything, it all just came down to this one story. I was lost, I found my master picked me up, and here I am now. Swamiji talked about Rajasi Janakananda, who was Master's most advanced male disciple. And we did a program which most of you saw of monologues taken from the words of those disciples. And there was a monologue for Rajasi, which was actually taken from his own words, but we had to take a lot of liberties in order to make it interesting, much more than any of the other disciples. So why would you describe Rajasi? He said, Rajasi, he said, had no small talk. That's how he put it. He said he was silent most of the time, and when he did speak, he mostly said, Om Guru, Om Guru, Om Guru, Om Guru. Here's a self-made millionaire. He ran many different companies. He sat on the boards. He was in every way a success. He was so advanced spiritually. And all of that came down to Om Guru, Om Guru, Om Guru. All of Swami Kriyananda's incarnations came down to, and I asked to be his disciple, and he gave me his unconditional love. So there's this fascinating, just fascinating dynamic that we're all trying to work our way through here, which is, on one hand, we have to be, as Swami says in the reading today, you have to have enormous respect for delusion. Not in the sense of fearing it. He said, but don't ever underestimate it. Don't ever think for a minute, merely because I have this together, I can say that, I feel this way. I'm also extremely impressed by how little we actually know ourselves. Just how, even within the very cycle of ourselves, we find all these ways to cope. And we create this sort of way of being. And then we repeat it. I remember when I had a very small experience in meditation. This was very early on, very small experience. And I can't remember why I brought it to Swamiji, but I brought it to Swamiji in some way. And he said to me, don't be afraid. And I said like this, I'm not afraid! Just like that, just so tense and so nervous. I'm not afraid! And he just smiled at me, didn't carry it any further. But it was so interesting to me later that, in fact, I was very afraid. I just was too afraid to know that I was afraid. You know, because we have all of these ideas about the spiritual path, which are very, very complicated. And I'm carrying the mantle that Swami put down in many ways. And I spent yesterday morning with a wonderful group talking about superconsciousness and subconsciousness and vrittis and, you know, just all of the things that I learned from Swamiji and that I think it's very important to put out for others to also understand. It helped me. It's helped me enormously to be able to use the wisdom aspect of the spiritual path. But one must never mistake any of that for actual freedom. Because there was Judas, and he was said to be, according to the tradition of the Bible, a very bright guy, also said to be of a different group. He was wealthier, he was more in with the establishment, and he was so convinced that where the power was where Jesus should go. And that was what the real conflict was. He wanted to go where the power was. And Jesus knew where the power was. And the power was in this very, very simple relationship. Because, let me think how to put this, we really can't sort it out for ourselves, no matter how clever you are. And in fact, Sri Yukteswar warns in Autobiography of a Yogi, intelligence is a two-edged sword. You can either use it to embroil yourself even more in delusion because you're so smart about the way you explain it all, or you can use it just to cut through. And Swami used it in the best possible way. He used his brilliance to create a world for us, but in the end, he saw that the only thing that really mattered is the way the masters just simply lift you out of it. And they lift you out of all of it. They lift you out of the need for scripture. There's the story in between Krishna and Drupadi, the wife of the Pandavas, his great devotee. And he wanted her to practice yoga, is how he put it. Yoga meaning the science of extricating yourself from delusion. And she said, "Lord, you'll first have to bless me to take my mind away from you enough so that I can practice yoga." And what they were saying there, and then that was what the whole point of the discussion was, which is, it really comes down to just that heart to heart. And this is why in the Gita it says, when you ponder the objects of the senses, and that's where it all begins, when we let our mind start going around this world and thinking about what we want. Master said, it also when Swami was talking about why people fall off the path, Master said, "Oh yes, desire for," and then Swamiji said, he sort of left a pause there while everyone could fill in the blank, you know, and he talked about monks in the ashram there. "Oh, I think I should need to go off and be a scientist. I need to go off and be a musician. I need to go off and do this." And it's not like there's anything inherently wrong with it, but once we start pondering on those realities as where it's going to fulfill us, then we have to always respect the power of Maya. Talked about Judas. Judas started being interested in money, and then he became interested in the power that money can bring. And then he became interested in the status that the power that money can bring comes, and he began to argue with his guru. And that's what Swami writes is what happens. He began to think, "Well, Jesus is very strong spiritually, but in this field I know more." I was reading actually something interesting. I was listening to a meeting we had many years ago with Swamiji about our Education for Life schools. And it was actually the meeting in which he came up with the name Living Wisdom School. Prior to that, we called it the Ananda School because we wanted to really tie it in with what we were doing here. But it became impossible to persuade people that if it was an Ananda school, it wasn't a parochial school. And after all, it was located right here in a church. So if you have a Catholic school in a Catholic church, you can't help but think it's a Catholic, a school in a Catholic church, you think it's a Catholic school. Trying to explain to people that the Ananda school and the Ananda church is not a parochial school was very difficult. And it was in that meeting that he came up with the name Living Wisdom, because it's the essence of spirituality, it's self-realization, which is not by any means owned by Ananda. But we were having a discussion there about networking, is actually what we were talking about working with lots of other groups. And Swamiji said something extremely interesting at that point. He said, our greatest danger is that in the effort to cooperate with others, we begin to dilute what it is that we ourselves are doing. And he actually said, you know, he was very cautious about our getting involved with other people, because even in the necessity, now think about it, when you start trying to make it work with someone else, you always kind of back off a little bit, don't you? Because you don't want to offend them. You don't want them to feel that, well, you know, you can have what you're having and I have what I have and we're all just a little like this. But you have to be very, 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 very careful. Now, I was thinking about that in the context of our own spiritual life. You know, it's the diluting of our one-pointed focus on what we're doing is what makes us vulnerable. Judas didn't think that he was diluting it. He just wanted Jesus to pay a little more attention to the power structure, be a little more attentive to them, try to get them a little more on our side. After all, they can help us, you know, he was trying to say to Jesus. And Jesus wouldn't. He just spoke what he had to say, and if the people in charge didn't like it, well, he got crucified in the end. That's how it all worked out. And that wasn't what Judas wanted. Judas wanted them to cooperate. And so in our own personal spiritual life, we have a tendency to just kind of want to make it work with everything else. We just want to make it work with everything else. I can have a little of this and a little of that and a little of this and a little of that. And then somehow it's all still going to come out just right. Now, part of it has to be just simply honesty. We just have to say to ourselves, you know, I'm serious about the spiritual path, but not that serious. And the prayer has to become that serious. I remember many years ago there was a man who was at Ananda at the time who subsequently left, although he was very close. He was very close to Swamiji. And I was standing in the kitchen of Crystal Hermitage one day, and I really don't know what prompted the conversation, but I said something to the effect of, there's just really nothing in this world that interests me. I didn't mean I didn't have desires by any means, but it was just like I didn't have interest. The world wasn't interesting to me. I didn't have a long list of things I wanted to do. He said back to me, there's many things I'm interested in doing. Just like that. And later I was speaking to Swami. I was shocked when he said that to me. I said, Swamiji, this is what he said. And Swamiji just very seriously and a little bit sadly said, yes, that's true. And eventually all those desires went off. Now, this is a very good man. I mean, a very dear, wonderful person. As I often say, if you were going to be trapped on a desert island with someone, he would be a very good choice. You know, these are fine people. But we have to make decisions within ourselves. You know, how much am I really for God? And we have to ask ourselves that question every single day. And we have to have the nerve to answer it honestly. And I've had to say to myself many times, well, I'd like to be that free, but I'm not. I'd like to even want to be that free, but I don't. I'd like to want to renounce this reality, but I don't think that I can. And you just say that. I'm for God, but not that much yet. But I will be. Because we really can't move. We can't progress if we're confused. And confusion really sets in when we try, even to ourselves, to make ourselves somebody that we're not. You know, this is who I am. And God can work with us a lot more that way. That's among other reasons why just concentrating on that one reality. I was thinking when we were praying at the beginning today, we do this, you know, Sri Yukteswar, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, and it's very important not to just go Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, you know, like this, and then somehow after we finish the litany, then we actually start paying attention. But what are we saying each time? We're talking about those souls who've come to rescue us from delusion. And in the end, the more you struggle on your own, the more you try to become serious on the spiritual path, the more you realize it just doesn't come from inside of us. It comes from grace descending. And when you realize it's coming from grace descending, it's not an effort to keep your mind there. It's like you're drowning here, and we're going down for the third or fourth or maybe the 10,000th time, and you're just trying to figure out how to get out of the current, and there's a rope. What are you going to think about? Just going to think about that rope. Just like Rajasi at the end, all he could say was Om Guru, Om Guru. Swami Kriyananda at the end, all he could tell us over and over again was, and then I found the autobiography, then I went to Los Angeles, and then I knelt in front of Master, and he blessed me. Just keep it very, very simple. All of this complexity just comes back to there. A very good prayer is, okay, sir, what are we going to do about this? It works. What are we going to do about this? You got to have some solution here. I wonder what it is. I don't know. I'm at the end of my tether here. Give me a rope. Om Guru, Om Guru. Wouldn't that be wonderful? No matter what question is asked us, that's where we go. No matter what circumstance we're in, that's where we go. No matter what we think we are, that's who we are. Now, that's true freedom and true joy. God bless. Спасибо.